We're holding Yud Chesem and Aleph, the first line. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua had said that he agrees with Rabbi Gamliel in a certain case. Namely, he said, where Reuven says to Shimon, this field used to belong to your father, and I bought it from him. So then we say we believe him, because Apesha also Apesha here too. He didn't have to say it belonged to the guy's father. In the first place, he could have said that all along, that I owned it all along. So we talked about in the Gemara on Yud Zayin and Rebbeis a couple of possibilities, why we need to say that case, versus, in other words, the Rabbi Yeshua had continued in the Mishnah, if there was Edim, that it used to belong to the guy's father, and he says, I bought it from you, then we don't believe him without having a shtar or chazaka. And we talked about in the Gemara on Yud Zayin Amud Beis a couple of possibilities why we wouldn't believe him with chazaka. One possibility is maybe he didn't have full 3 years of chazaka while the father was alive. Another one is we're talking about that he had. Another possibility is he had 3 years of chazaka while the father was alive, but the father was in a different country where it's impossible to travel from one to the other, and therefore he couldn't have known about it, and therefore he couldn't have made a macha. Or if he made a macha, the news of it wouldn't have reached, and therefore we say that the chazaka is not a valid chazaka. But if he has a pesha, also a pesha hitter, then we believe him. So Rabbi Yeshua says that. So Rabbi Yeshua is saying, even though in the previous perek, even in a case where we say that a woman has a migui, for example, she says that one of the cases we had in the previous perek was that the husband finds her not a basula on the wedding night. He says that, I was nenas after the erusin, and in that case, nistachfa sadehu, it's your tough luck, because at the time of the erusin, I was still a basula, and it happened during the erusin. I'm not also to you, because it was an onus, unless he's a kohen, she's not also to him. But nevertheless, I still am entitled to my 200 because it's not my fault. And he says, no, maybe it happened before the Erosin. So then Rabbi Yeshua had said, we don't believe her. Now there she has a migui because she could have said Mukas 8. So you see, nevertheless, Rabbi Yeshua is not believing her. So now in our perek, Rabbi Yeshua is saying, we do believe a person when he has a migui. And the Gemara explained on Tesayin Amar Aleph that the difference is that in the case in our Mishnah where Rabbi Yeshua believes him, Ein Shor Shochot Lefanecha, metaphorically, there's no shecht an ox in front of him. In other words, there's no actual claim that the other guy has, where therefore this guy is responding and saying, yes, but it actually belonged, then where it actually belonged to your father. In other words, had Shimon been coming and saying, what are you doing in this field? And Reuven says it was your father's, or actually if Shimon had said, I have proof that this is supposed to be my field, because I have proof that it was my father's, what are you doing in it? And Reuven says, I bought it from your father, then that would be Shor Shochot, but then he wouldn't have a migui. So in the case of our Mishnah, he has a migui because he didn't have to say it to begin with that it belonged to the guy's father. Whereas in the case of the first perek, there is a Shor Shochot because after all, the husband finds her not a basula. So therefore, Rabbi Yeshua says that even a migui is not enough. Now, so the Gemara was discussing why Rabbi Yeshua has to phrase his din in terms of a complicated case like that, where he says, this field used to belong to your father and I bought it from him, rather than why can't he say this field used to belong to you and I bought it from you and that would be good. And the Gemara discussed why, and that led into the possibilities of why it is indeed that without Hapesha Asa Hapesha Hitu, we wouldn't believe him, because as we said, he didn't have a proper chazaka. Okay, so the Gemara says, why do we need to talk about chazaka at all? The listening moider Rabbi Yeshua ba'omel chaver monalavisi mimcha. Why can't the Mishnah talk about? Rabbi Yeshua would agree. In a case where a person says, where Reuven says to Shimon, I borrowed a money from you, or prativ lecha, and I paid it back to you, shehud ne'mon, we would also believe him. That's also a pesha hitter, and there's also no shor shochot lefanecha, because the other guy is not making any kind of claim that he's responding to. So why couldn't Rabbi Yeshua present the case and say that he would believe a migui, he would believe a pesha asa pesha hitter in that kind of situation? Which the Shittim Kubetzes explains that Rabbi Yeshua would say that if we're just distinguishing between Shor Shochot and Ein Shor Shochot, the point is, the Gemara established before that the reason why Rabbi Yeshua wants to talk about a case of Chazaka is to tell us that, in fact, that if there was some of the years of Chazaka while the father was alive, and then some after the father passed away, it's no good, but still... The Mishnah could have told us, the Mishnah didn't have to tell us, that greater Chiddush, it still could have told us about a case involving him rather than his father, which is a simpler case. Okay, so look, I mean, the Chazakah doesn't belong in our Masechta. So why didn't he present that case? And the answer is, Mishum de Kamboi L'Misnei Sefer, because the Mishnah wants to continue, Rabbi Yeshua wants to contrast it with Im Yesh Edim Shu, because then you would have to say, Im Yesh Edim Shu Lova Mimenu, if there were Edim that Reuven borrowed from Shimon, V'Oim Praitiv, and he says, I paid him back, Einan Nemon, then we wouldn't believe him, and that's not correct. After all, we know the din is that if Reuven borrows money from Shimon, even if there were Edim present, he's not obligated to pay him back with Edim. He can pay him back not without Edim. He can pay him back without Edim, and we believe him to say paraiti. So it wouldn't be correct to say that if there were Edim that he borrowed from him, that he wouldn't be Naaman, because in fact he is Naaman. Okay, so the Gemara says, V'lisni moedir Rabbi Yeshua ba'omel chaver monol avicha b'yadi. Fine, why don't we have another case? By the way, Tosfos points out, what about according to the, now there is an opinion in Gemara Shavuos that says that he does have to pay him back with Edim. So the fact is it's a machlokas tanoim, so therefore our Mishnah could be going according to one of those tanoim. Or again, you know, we said there is a chazaka in our Mishnah, the fact that ein machzikin minichse katan, the fact that you can't do a valid chazaka when the heir, when the father passed away and the heir is a katan, so that's the greater chiddush, and therefore the Mishnah is telling us that case. Okay. So what about V'listi moedir Rabbi Yeshua ba'omel chaver monol avicha b'yadi? Why doesn't Rabbi Yeshua say a case where he says your father has a mana in my hands? In other words, I owed your father a mana v'hachaltiv pras, and I paid him back a pras which is half a mana. So I paid him back. So he's saying that I paid back half shu neman, that then we would believe him. Now usually moedir mitzvah is going to be chayiv shvur. But here, apesha also apesha hitir, because he didn't have to ein shor shochot lefanecha, because he didn't have to say anything at all. So why doesn't Rabbi Yeshua present that kind of case? And the answer is, the Gemara answers back, Alibi Daman. Well, according to which opinion, do you within the Machloikas about that, do you want Rabbi Yeshua to be saying? Now there was Machloikas of the Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov on that point. If a person says, if Reuven says to Shimon, I owed your father a mana, and I owed your father a mana, and I paid him back half. But the other guy, now the Chachamim say that not only when he's moedah by himself, even if Shimon, who is the son of the lender, comes and says, "Where is the mana that you borrowed from my father?" and he says, "I paid back half." Even then, the Chachamim say that he's potter from the shvua of moedah b'miktas, because he could have, as we're going to say further on the Omud, he could have denied the whole thing. So then, I alibi de rabbanon. So if you're talking within the Chachamim's opinion, ha'amri meishiv aveda havi, they say regardless whether Shimon made a prior claim or not, either way, Reuven is considered a meishiv aveda, because he would have been capable of saying to Shimon that I didn't owe your father anything. So therefore, and the Chachamim hold in that case he's potter from a shvua. So then Rabbi Yeshua can't say, because of Apesha Asar Apesha Hitter, the fact is that even when there's no Apesha Asar Apesha Hitter, he'd still be potter, because the Chachamim would always consider him Meshur Aveda. The I alibid Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and if you go according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, ha'am a shvur boy. Well, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds that in a case like that, you do have to swear, and actually, even when he admits on his own, we still make him swear a shvur of Moedim Mechtis. We don't say Meshur Aveda. So there's no case where we would say that he would have been chayev in a shvua, but he's potter on the grounds of a pesha asa pesha hitter. Either according to the Chachamim, he's always potter, whether he has a pesha asa pesha hitter or not, or according to the Blazim and Yaakov, he's always chayev either way. So what are we talking about? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisit, or Blazim and Yaakov, pa'amim sha'adam nishba al tainas atzma. It can happen that a person can make a shvua on his own claim, even though there was no claim against him. He himself ends up having to swear. Ketzad, what's the case? Exactly that. Monala avicha b'yadi. If Reuven says to Shimon, your father lent me a mana, or otherwise I owe him a mana, I owed him rather a mana, v'achaltiv pras, and I gave him half of it, so now I still owe the other half, hareza nishba, so Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that he has to swear. V'zeru shenishba al tainas atzma. He has to swear even though it was his own claim, because that's moedah b'miktas. So we see that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that he has to swear on moedah b'miktas always, whether there's a claim or not. Whereas the Chum say we consider him like a Meshav Aveda, it's as if he just returned a lost object. In other words, Now, there's a Mishnah in Gittin that says, in exactly a case like that, involving Meshiv Aveda, if Reuven says to Shimon, if Shimon comes to Reuven and says, I lost something, I understand that you found it, and he gives Simonim, and Reuven says, here, and Shimon says, 1 second, this is only $100, I lost $200, we don't consider Reuven to be a Moedim B'miktzas, and make him swear, well, we would, Minat Torah, but the Chachamim made a Takonim, Epnei Tikkun Olam, that he shouldn't have to swear, because otherwise nobody's going to bother wanting to return a lost object, because the other guy could always say that it was more. So we see. So the Chachamim apply that in this case over here. When it comes to if Shimon himself was the lender, then as the Gemara is going to say further down on the Amud, then Reuven wouldn't have the chutzpah to deny the loan entirely. But because Shimon is not the lender, he's only the son of the lender, then he would have been able to. So therefore, the Chachamim consider him a Meshiv Aveda. And therefore, he's covered under that same takana of Meshiv Aveda, that therefore he's potter from a shvua of Moedim B'Mitzvahs. So the Gemara asks Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Lesele Meshiv Aveda potter. So what does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov not hold of that concept of Meshiv Aveda? I mean, he agrees that there is a takana chachamim on that subject. So why doesn't he apply it over here? And the answer is Amar Rav b'Toyne Katan. The answer is where Shimon, who's making the claim, is a katan. So there is, after all, a claim. So we're not talking about where there's no claim at all. It's true. If Reuven were to voluntarily go over to Shimon and say, I owed your father a mana and I paid him back half, then Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov might agree that he's potter from a shavur. But here we're talking about there is a claim. We don't consider it to be a claim, a strong claim in halacha, because the claim of a katan, but nevertheless, it is a claim. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds that that's enough to make it that it's not considered Meshiv Aveda. Now, Tosfos, by the way, points out that Meshiv Aveda is actually, a true Meshiv Aveda, actually, is, you don't even need a takana of the Chachamim. Because of Nigui, he'd be actually potter from a Shavua on a Daraisa. But he'd be on a Daraisa level. But we're saying that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, what we're saying is that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov what we're asking is, it's not a matter of the takana of the chachamim of Meshiv Aveda. It's on the face of it, he has a migui. And so the answer is, there's a tainus katan, and therefore, there's not actually a migui. Okay, so the Gemara asks, V'am amar en yishboin al tainus cheda shayt v'katan. Don't we learn in a Mishnah that you don't swear on a claim from a cheda shayt v'katan? So therefore, if a cotton is making a shavur, is making a taina, then there shouldn't be a shavur, even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Now, of course, I mean, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is a tana, he can argue with a Mishnah, but still, we're going to assume he's not going to argue with a stam Mishnah unless we know otherwise. So the answer is, my cotton gadol. What we mean a cotton over here, we mean that actually he is right now a gadol when he's making the claim. By my kodele cotton, why is Rav calling him a cotton? Dilagabi mili de aviv cotton who? Because when it comes to his father's affairs, he's like a cotton because he doesn't know the ins and outs of things. So that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying. We don't consider him a Meshiv Aveda. We consider that after all, as a taino of a gadol. Therefore, he should have to swear on it. Well, then the question is, Ihochi Tainas Atzma, then what do you mean? Why is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov phrasing it in terms of it's his own claim? And the chiddush is that even though it's his own claim, he's still chayev to swear, Tainas Achedim. It's actually a taina from somebody else. So it's a regular case of Moedim Miktas. And the answer is, Tainas Achedim Vahidas Atzma. The answer is, what we mean is, somebody else made the claim, but he's the one admitting to it. Says, what do you mean? Kuli tanosa tana sachen vaydas atzmininu. Isn't that the case? Whenever you have a taina, whenever you have a moedim miktas, it's that somebody else made the claim and he's being moedim. So why is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov calling this one tainas atzmai? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ella, no, we have to say like this. When we say a cotton, when Rav said betoyne cotton, he means an actual cotton. Not like we just said that it means a gadol, but we consider him a cotton because he doesn't know his father's affairs in and out. But rather, hocha b'derabba kamiflegi. The underlying machloikus between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim is regarding what Rabba says. Da'amar Rabba, mipnei ma'amra Torah moedim miktas atayna yishova. Why anyway does the Torah say that if a person is moedim miktas, he has to swear? Now we learn that from a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, where it said, where asher yoyma ki huzeh, where we learn from that if a person admits to part of the claim, then he has to take a shavur. The question is why? So the reason is like this, Rabba says, chazaka ain't a meis ponov of pnei bal choyvei. We have a chazaka
Now, the question is, in other words, shouldn't we consider him a Meshav Aveda? Shimon is saying, you owe me $100. Reuven is saying, no, I only owe you 50. Shouldn't we consider him like a Meshav Aveda? Again, according to Rashi, it would be covered by that Takana of the Chachamim. According to Tosfos, he even has a Migui, because he could have said, I don't owe anything. Why is the Torah making him swear a Shavua? So Rashi explains, by the way, that we're talking about over here, that we're still sticking with the, we're explaining that Toyanei Katan means an actual katan. Tosfos discusses that and says not necessarily. Anyway, we're still sticking maybe with the idea that it means a gadol. We call him a gadol, but we consider him like a cotton because he doesn't know his father's affairs inside and out. But nevertheless, we're still saying that the underlying machlokas is regarding what Rabbah says. Once we understand what Rabbah says, why a moed miktsas in general is chayav shvua, then we'll see whether it applies to this case. So mipnei ma amar term modim mixas a tiny yeshava. Why do we say that a modim mixas has to swear? On the face of it, we should consider him a meshav aveda. Without Reuven saying I owe you 50, then Shimon would have on the face of it no recourse at all. He's saying you owe me 100. Reuven is saying I owe you 50. He could have just said I owe you nothing. He has a migri. Why do we make him swear? So the reason is chazaka ain't on a meis ponim mipnei baal choyvei, because we have a chazaka that a person is not going to be so brazen as to deny his baal choyvei and deny the entire choyv. After all, the other guy did him a favor and lent him money, so therefore a regular person doesn't have the chutzpah to do that. Now, Rashi says it's because Rashi elsewhere says that the reason is because the other guy did him a favor and lent him money. Tosfos Tosfos over here points out that no, that doesn't work in all cases, because what about in the case of a pikadon? In the case of a pikadon, the other guy didn't do him any favor, and still we say that a person doesn't have the chutzpah to deny the whole thing. So rather, Tosfos springs that the reason is because a person doesn't usually lie about something that's easily detectable. So even by Picardin, after all, the other person is going to realize that he's lying blatantly, and most people won't do that. They have the expression milsa davidili glui le meshakri inchi, that people don't usually lie about something that's easily verifiable. So here it would be the same kind of thing. Anyway, so a person is not going to be mazed upon him. So therefore, v'hai b'chola boy delichbere. So really, he would have liked to deny the whole thing. V'hai delikofa le mishum de'enon mazed upon him, but he can't. Because he can't because of that chazaka, because he doesn't have the brazenness to do that. So therefore he doesn't have a migri. Well then in that case then why aren't we concerned that maybe he's lying altogether? Why are we even making him take a shvua? Why aren't we concerned that the shvua itself might be a false shvua? So the reason is. Really, on the other hand, he would have admitted to the entire thing. The only reason why he's not admitting to the whole thing is because he's trying to evade it. He's trying to say, I don't have enough money right now. He's thinking to himself, I don't have enough money to pay the whole thing right now. So I'll admit to half, and that way, at least for the time being, I'll be off the hook for half of it. So the fact that he doesn't admit it is because he wants to evade it. So he thinks to himself, Ad dahavali zuzi, let me wait until I have some money, or parainale, and then I'll pay him the whole thing. So when he swears that he doesn't owe the whole thing, it's not that he's trying to actually deny forever the whole thing, he's just trying to push it off. V'rachmana omar, so therefore the Torah says, Romi shvuale, make him take a shvua, ki heche delo dele bekule, that way he will admit the whole thing because he doesn't want to swear falsely. So if we don't make him swear, then he's going to stick to his claim that he only owes 50, and then he may in fact decide in the end, you know what, I will only pay 50, and how is the guy going to know? So therefore the Torah is going to make him take a shavua to make sure that now we have it on record, and now he's not going to deny that he owes the 100, because he's not going to want to swear falsely, so we do that. That way he'll admit the whole thing, and then they can work something out. They can work out an installment plan or something like that. So now, once we have that svara, by the way, Tosfos discusses over here at some length Rashi. So Rashi doesn't explain it over here, but Rashi explains at the beginning above Matzia what we were saying before, that when if the question is if we're saying that we don't trust him that that when he says that he only owes half, then why are we allowing him to take a shavua? What if he's going to be what if he's going to swear falsely? Tosfos discusses at some length and says not necessarily just because a person is choshud on on money doesn't make him automatically choshud on a shavua. It's not a matter of that we shouldn't allow him to take a shavua. It's more that we're saying what good is the shavua going to do. So now that we understand that svara of Rabba, so now we have to argue within the parameters of it. So now, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Savar, Loshna Boi V'Loshna B'Bnoi, Enemi, is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds that there's no difference whether the original lender, or Mafkid, or whatever, or whether his son, either way, the other guy is not going to be Meiz, he's not going to have the chutzpah to deny the whole thing, so therefore he doesn't have a migui, V'Hokach Lav Meishav Aveda, obviously, you can't call him a Meishav Aveda, so therefore it's an ordinary case of Moedim Mikzas. He doesn't have a migui. On the other hand, we're not suspecting that he's going to swear falsely, and the Shavuah will do some good, because now it'll put him on record as saying that he owes the whole thing. But Rabbanan Sabri, Boyhu Deine Meiz, Havu Bibnoi Meiz. The Chachamim, meanwhile, hold that he may not be Meiz on the person himself who lent him money, Havu Bibnoi Meiz, but he would have no problem, say the Chachamim, denying it to the face of the son, because after all, the son doesn't know exactly all of his father's affairs. Umidaloi Heiz, and since he didn't, Meishav Aveda Havi, then therefore we can consider him a Meishav Aveda and make him Potter from Shavuah. So that would be the underlying machlokas when we said on Amud Aleph that in a case where the son says that you owe my father X amount of money and he's saying I owe less than that, then so Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying that he's chayev shavua. The Chacham saying he's potter based on what we just said. So now, applying that to our Mishnah then, so we couldn't have used the example of where Reuven says to Shimon, I owed your father a mana and I paid him back half, because the second half wouldn't fit. We can't say that only because of our Pesha Asa, our Pesha Hitter, which is a migui, would we be allowing him to be potter, would we believe him, because according to the Chachamim, we're going to potter him regardless. Because even if the katan is claiming against him, we can still say that he has the migui. He could have denied the whole thing. But it's not really a pesha asa, a pesha hitu, because the child does, after all, say that the child, according to Rashi, an older person who was a child at the time, according to Tosfos, whatever. Anyway, the point is, they are saying that they're saying the fact is you owe my father the money. So it's not a pesha asa, a pesha hitter, and according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, he is going to be chayev shavua. Therefore, the Mishnah could not have used that example, and therefore we're left with that Rabbi Yeshua and the Mishnah had to use the example where he says this field belonged to your father and I bought it from him, where then also we have the chiddush in it, which the Gemara had said on Yud Zayin Amud Beis concerning dinim of chazaka. All right, continuing on the topic of a pesha aser, so really all of this is a digression from the main topic of our masechta, which is ksubas. So these couple of mishnayos are digressing to talk about dinei mominus, but mainly we're focusing on this matter of a pesha aser, a pesha hitter, where we say we wouldn't have known something without them, and therefore we can believe them. It's a kind of a stronger migui, and then eventually on Daf Chof Beis we're going to get back to cases more involving marriage, which even those are still more of a digression from the main topic of Ksubas, but still they're at least a little more closely related. But eventually we're going to get back to that by way of this discussion of a Pesha Asa, a Pesha Hitu. So the Mishnah says, Ha'edim she'omru ksav yadeinu hu zeh. If Edim come and say that this signature on this document is ours, so you need when a person brings a document to Beis Din, the other person, for example, so Shimon is bringing a document saying that Reuven owes him money, it's always possible for Reuven to claim that the signatures were forged. So we often need kiyum shtaris. We often need a process of verifying the signatures on the shtaris. And there are a number of different ways of verifying it. The Rambam lists altogether. There are five different ways. One of them is the Edim can testify about their own signatures, which is the subject of our Mishnah. And then there are various other ways. You can have other people give Edus and say that they are that it's their signatures. You can have Beis Din can compare it with other signatures that they have on file, etc. There are a few different ways. Anyway, so Ha'edim Sha'amru Ksav Yadeinu Hu Zeh. So when Edim come to Beis Din and say, these are our signatures, Avol anusim hayinu, but when we signed the shtar, we were onus, we were forced to sign it. So therefore, so that makes the shtar possible. We'll see in the Gemara what kind of onus we're talking about. Ktanim hayinu, or they're saying we were children at the time. Or psule edus hayinu, or we were possible for edus for one reason or another, and there can be various reasons they're possible for edus. They might have been, for example, they might have been over avera and hadn't yet done tshuva at the time. For example, gazlonim or gamblers or several other things that the Mishnah and Sanhedrin says are possible edus. Or they might have been relatives of the people in the shtar, and since then they're not relatives. For example, let's say they were brothers-in-law, and since then their wives died. So in all those cases, in all those cases, we believe them, and the shtar is possible. Because again, a pesha also, a pesha hitter, because without them, we wouldn't have known that we need them in order to tell us that the signatures are valid, and then the same ones, they're telling us it's their signature, are also telling us that the signatures themselves are possible for a side reason, so therefore we believe them. Now, Tosfos brings up the point that we have, this is on the face of it, a migu b'makom edim, because the fact is we have a shtar with signatures on it. So now on the face of it, then isn't it a migu against edim? Because after all, their own signatures function in effect as edim. After all, when we see signatures on the Edim, when we see signatures on a document of Edim, by default, we assume they weren't anusim or psula edus or what have you. And the answer is, Tosfos says, the fact that we need kiyum, the fact that we need the signatures to be verified anyway, then we don't have a kiyum when they're saying that they themselves are anusim or whatever. They're saying toch kedei dibur, so therefore it's not considered a migu b'makom edim. Because together with saying that it's their signatures, they're also saying they're psulim. Now the Gemara later on is going to talk about where, let's say, Beis Din has their signatures already on file, and now they're saying that, yes, these are our signatures, you match them up correctly. However, we were psula edus, that's different, then we would call that a migu b'makom edim, and then we would say no good, then we don't believe them. So the Mishnah continues, v'im yesh edim shu ksav yadam, if there are other edim saying that it's their signatures, so Reuven and Shimon are signed on the document, but now Levi and Yehuda come and say that these are Reuven and Shimon's signatures, and now Reuven and Shimon come and say, yes, indeed they are our signatures, but we were anusim or what have you, oshah yesh ksav yadam yotzim v'makom acher, or those signatures can be verified on the basis of something else. So Beis Din has another shtar on file that has already been niskayim, and the dayanim compare the signatures and see that it's the same thing. Ein nemonim, then we don't know a pesha also a pesha hitter. Therefore, we don't believe them to say that they were anusim or ktanim or what have you. So the Gemara says, Amar Rami bar Chama, lo shanu ela omru anusim hayinu machmas mamon. When we talk about onus in the Mishnah, what kind of onus are we talking about? When they say that we were anusim because of money, in other words, that people threaten them, if you don't sign this document, then we're going to take such and such from you, or we're going to force you to pay us money or whatever. So then we would say that, so then in effect, they're claiming that they're Rishoyim, because they're saying that we were willing to sign on a false shtar because of money. So therefore, in effect, they're saying that they're Rishoyim. We say, Ein Adam Mesim Atzmei Rasha, a person doesn't have the ability to declare themselves a Rasha. So therefore, that's why the Mishnah says that usually we wouldn't believe them unless HaPesha Asa HaPesha Hetir. And that's why in the Sefer we don't believe them, and in the Reisha we only believe them on the basis of a Pesha Asa Pesha Heter. Aval Anusim Oinu Machmas Nefoshes, but if they say we were Anusim because of lives, that the owner of the Shtar threatened to kill us, and he had a credible threat of violence if we don't sign it. Now, after all, then we can't call them Rishoyim for signing on such a thing. Harei Lo Ne'emonim, then we can believe them even without a Pesha Asa Pesha Heter, because after all, a person... Most mitzvahs can be suspended where there's a danger to life. So therefore we can't say, so therefore they're not calling themselves Rishoyim. So Tosfos points out, by the way, that in the, what about the other cases of the Mishnah? The Ketanim, we're going to say soon, the Gemara is going to explain later that the Gemara is going to mention soon that Rish Lakish says whenever you have Edim signed on a shtar, it's as if they were already investigated and based in, so therefore we have no reason to assume that they were Ketanim. As far as Psula Edus, the Malva himself, also the Gemara is going to explain soon, the Malva himself is going to be careful to make sure that only Kosher Edim are signing on his document. So those are the cases where we don't believe him, where we don't believe them. But if they say machmas nefashes, then we believe him. Then we believe them, even if they don't have a migui, because the fact is they're entitled to say that they did something to save their own lives. Amalei Rava, but Rava says to Rami Bachama, Kol Kamine, how can we believe them? Even if they say earnest nefashas, how can we believe them anyway? Don't we have a rule? Kibin shehigid shuvein echozer umagid. Once a person has testified, then he can't re-testify to be mevatel as previous edus. Just like you have, for example, suppose a regular case, edim come to Beis Din and give edus on something. Later on, they say, you know what? Actually, we want to retract our edus. We were lying. We're not going to believe them. Once they gave their first edus, then they can't retract. The same thing over here. When they say, when they're signed on the shtar, as we're going to say in a second, that it's considered in effect as though they gave edus at the time. So now they don't have the ability to give another edus that would contradict the first one. So even if they're saying machmas nefashis, how could we believe them? Pesha sa pesha hitir is one thing, because again, we wouldn't even know that the shtar is kosher without them, because we need the kiyum. But in a regular case where we don't need the kiyum, where like in the sefer of the Mishnah where we have other edim available to be makayamit, or we have their signatures on file from a different shtar, even if they say machmas nefashis, how can we believe them? Once a person has said edus, once edim have said edus, we don't believe them to say something else that will undo that edus. And v'chitema hanimili alpeh, so you're going to argue that maybe that only applies when it's an edus balpeh, al b'shtar loy, but maybe it's different when it's an edus on a shtar, maybe a shtar that they could believe them to say something that would contradict the shtar. No homer, shlokish edim achsum al ashtar, nasik mishinachkar edus in rebeistin. Didn't Rishlokish say that when edim are signed on a shtar, no matter where they signed it, even not in front of beistin, it's as if they were already investigated in beistin? And the reason is, Rashi elsewhere explains, the reason is because a person doesn't usually have the chutzpah to forge a shtar. So therefore, when we find signatures on a document, then we have every reason to assume that these are valid signatures. So therefore, once they said edus, in effect, by signing on the shtar, then they don't have the ability to say something else that would contradict it. So Ella, rather, Rava says, no, the distinction is not between whether they said anusim machmas momen or anusim machmas nefashis, ki itmar areisha itmar. Rami Bachama's distinction is valid, but not as far as only as far as the reisha of the Mishnah, where we need them to tell us that the shtar is kosher. So when we say harelu ne'emanim, first we assumed that Rami Bachama's statement was referring to the sefer of the Mishnah. That when we said if we have those signatures on file or there are other edim, then we don't believe them, even though they're saying anusim ayinu, unless they say anusim machmas nefashis. Then if they were to say anusim machmas nefashis, Rami Bachama had said that even if we have other edim testifying that these signatures are valid, still we would believe Reuven and Shimon to say that these signatures were obtained ba'onus and therefore it's no good because it was edus. Now that we slug that up, Rava is saying the distinction actually applies to the first part of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah had said, Harelu ne'emanin, we said that if we don't have other edim or their signatures on file, then we do believe those edim. Then we do believe those edim, Reuven and Shimon themselves, when they say these are our signatures, but we were on Nusim. So now on that, Rava says we can apply Rami Bachama's statement. This applies only when they say we were on Nusim Machmas Nefashis. So then they're not saying that they're Rishoyim, so therefore we can believe them. Aval Omru on Nusim Hina Machmas Momen, but if they say we were honest because of money, because the guy threatened to harm us financially, and therefore we signed Ein Nemonim, then even though they have a Pesha also, a Pesha Hitir, even then we wouldn't believe them. Oh, my timer. At my timer, and why would that be? Einon meisim atzmei rosha, because a person cannot make himself a rosha with his edus. When a person says something from which it's going to emerge that he himself is a rosha, then we don't believe him. So even a pesha asa, a pesha hitir is not enough to make us believe them. So now Rashi says, so now we have to say, when we say, according to that, when we said psule edus of the Mishnah, we don't mean that they were, first we thought that it meant that it could be either one, psule edus either because of being over avera, for example, gamblers, or because of relatives. Now, based on what we're saying, it comes out that we can't say that the psule was because of them being gamblers or gazlonim or whatever the other case is, psule edus, because then you'd have the same problem of enon amesim atzmei rasha. So therefore, we have to say, for example, that we mean a psul of, for example, that they were relatives. Rashi also further over here on our part of the Gemara explains another case could be the way they're saying that we were avodim and now we're freed. On the Mishnah, Rashi didn't mention that. On the Mishnah, Rashi only said that they were the two possibilities: they were relatives or they were masachah bekovya. But here, Rashi adds another possibility also, that they could say that we were avodim and now we were freed. So in other words, what we're saying is, so even when they have a pesha asar, a pesha hitir, if that a pesha asar, a pesha hitir involves saying on themselves that they are rishoyim, then we wouldn't believe them. So then we would still say that the shtar is kosher. In fact, Tosfos points out there are other contexts where we say Pauginin and Dibura. We'll kind of divide their statement in half. We'll say part of it we'll accept and part of it not. But here, Kiyum Shtaris is Dirabbanan, therefore we're not going to say Pauginin and Dibura and say that the Shtar is possible. In other words, we could have said Pauginin and Dibura. We could have said on the face of it, yes, we were on Nusim, and take that part and ignore the fact that it was Machmas Mamun, but here we're not going to do that in order to pass all the Shtar. And also, Tosfos points out, Ones Machmas Nefoshes is not very common, so therefore we're not going to, unless they say explicitly, Anusim Ayuna Machmas Nefoshes, we're not going to assume that that's in fact what they were doing, that was the circumstances, because that kind of thing is pretty rare. Tosfos also goes on to discuss other reasons why we might not say Paugin and Dibura over here. So that's the distinction then. Okay, so we'll continue next week, next year, Be'ez Hashem.